Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for every UFC event with your hosts, TB Scouting MMA and
The Guru, back again for UFC Vegas 64, Marina Rodriguez taking on Amanda Lemos in your strawweight fight, right? We got an interesting matchup here. This is a title contender matchup, right?
I would say so. Oh, for sure.
I think importantly enough, we got to ask our friend Brett Appley, who's in the building, founder of Daily Fan MMA, right? Or just Daily Fan, right? Daily Fan.
Daily Fan MMA. Yeah, we got
Daily
it.
Daily Fan MMA. Awesome. I nailed it. Thank you.
Yes. So make sure to start off, please like and subscribe. But as we brought up just a second ago, here it is, dailyfanmma.com. You get your premium MMA content. Yeah, I mean, this is the place to go. And also, as you see there's some racing stuff there. There is a free tab. So make sure you check it out and see if it works for you. It also, something that we don't cover over here is daily fantasy content. So make sure you check that out. That's one of Brett Appley's specialties. So, I mean, without further ado, I mean, This isn't quite, you know, UFC 281, but no, it looks like we should have a fun card, right? I mean, at least maybe from an entertainment perspective, maybe not from a name perspective.
I know for sure we're going to have a damn fun time on this podcast because we got Brett Appley here. We're going to make some money, right? We're going to find a way to slice this apple here because this is interesting here, right? Because these fights, like you said, this is not UFC 281. This is certainly an interesting card, to say the least. In terms of some of these matchups, right? Our co-main event, which is pretty dang good, is still like a rebooked fight. So it's got its own little sketchiness involved to it. So everything's kind of a little wonky here. But that's why we got such a sharp guy like Brett here to help us navigate these waters. So TB, why don't you tee us up?
Yeah, man. So here we go. I mean, we got our main event. It's Marina Rodriguez versus Amanda Lemos. We have minus 215 Rodriguez, plus 185 Lemos. The over 4.5, plus 100, under 4.5, minus 130. I think, you know, one of the most important things to note here is that for a fighter we've never seen go, yeah, I mean, she's been three rounds for sure, Amanda Lemos, but for the two times she's been booked five, we haven't ever seen her go the distance. So to see the line at over under 4.5, certainly catching my eye, even if I don't play anything on it. But I will be paying attention. Most importantly, though, as we get into the breakdown of the fight, I think early, it's not going to look like plus 185 Lemos. Rodriguez at minus 215. The reason I felt so comfortable with Andrade at that number was the physicality advantage and the wrestling advantage. And that was something I pointed out over and over. And as I was searching and trying to find out why I felt good about Marina in this spot, I think it ends up coming down to, you know what I trust her to do? I trust her to work in the clinch. And if there's anything that can tire someone out, if it's not wrestling, it's clinch work. And I know Lemos was able to do it with Mizuki, but I don't think Mizuki's quite the same size or level of striker. Because, I mean, you look, the clinch strikes per minute, 3.4 for Marina just stands out on paper. I don't normally see people with a number that high. And, you know, Lemos up there with 1.96 herself, but you look at what they're absorbing. And man, I think Lemos, you know, from distance, she should, you know, keep this fight extremely close. You look at their numbers and you watch them on tape and you see, you know, Marina, she could be a bit loopy, whereas Lemos, she's a bit more explosive and powerful. I mean, Guru, do you think this fight goes the distance? Are you heavy on Marina here? Like, what's your angle, man? Because I'm still finding my way.
I find myself similarly walking carefully in this fight. I find myself not necessarily wanting to lay the chalk on Marina Rodriguez, right? I can't find myself to bring myself to the dog either, though, with the Jessica Andrade fight still looming in my head. You know, I was on Jessica Andrade squarely and firmly, and people planted their flag, you know, that was it. Jessica Andrade was what, like minus 250? So she's like a similar type underdog in this situation here, Amanda Lemos is. So I think that's almost kind of fair at the end of the day too, because I think Amanda Lemos's striking is while the numbers seem similar, I just think that the relative style the way they've earned these numbers and how inevitably these girls will look on the feet when fighting each other will be different. Sure, Amanda Lemos can start to crash forward and try to create some damage. That's her way to win the fight. She should try to do that. I just think Marina Rodriguez is pretty dang good at keeping distance. And then when she's not, like you already alluded to, she's just as good in the clinch. So why not take somebody with the height and I guess not reach advantage, but I'll take somebody with the height advantage. I think Marina should look bigger. I'm interested to see for sure how they both look on the scale, both being 35. But Lemos specifically has looked gaunt on the scale previously. So certainly not rushing to bet this fight. And, you know, respectfully to this card, right, this wasn't even the main event plan that we actually were supposed to have, right? Bryce Mitchell and Evliev, and everything is just scramble, scramble, scramble. Nothing came through for the UFC. So this is what we get kind of thing. I honestly think the co-main event should be 5 rounds because ties into my bet. I think it goes 3. So, Brett, it's been way too long since we've heard from you, buddy. What do you think?
Well, what's up, guys? I appreciate you having me on. And I mean, I'm excited this is a 5-round fight because, you know, you alluded to the Jessica Andrade Amanda Lemos fight. And I thought Lemos had a decent shot to win that fight just because I really respect her skills. Like, she is very effective. And her numbers rate out pretty well. I mean, she's landing more strikes than she absorbs, and she wrestles. You know, she averages more than a takedown landed per 15 minutes. She defends takedowns pretty well. She's one of the most physical fighters in this division. So, like, in terms of pure effectiveness, I think Lemos is one of the better fighters in this division. But we've seen her slow down a number of times. And at this point, I don't think it's fair to just assume she can keep up that effectiveness for a full 25 minutes. So that's why against Jessica Andrade, I was really hoping we would get like an extended fight just to gather more data. And then she like, you know, fell into a standing arm triangle choke in the first round. So that was disappointing. And then I didn't think she looked that great against Michelle Waterson in July, even though she ended up winning by submission. And so like in terms of the matchup overall, I think that you have to favor Rodriguez just from the 5-round dynamic alone, because Rodriguez is just so damn consistent and she can spam volume. She's an effective striker herself, just maybe not as powerful as Lemos, but she's gone 5 rounds on more than one occasion and landing 144 significant strikes and 125 significant strikes in 25 minutes. Lemos just has not shown the ability to do that yet. So if we get an extended fight, if we're getting championship rounds, I think you have to favor Rodriguez. It's just a question of like, can Lemos be effective up into that point, or like perhaps maybe we'll find out something new that we haven't seen in the past. Maybe she will go 25 minutes and we'll say, oh, actually her cardio is fine. It just looked worse in other fights. She even might have a wrestling advantage here. Rodriguez has been taken down, you know, by nearly every opponent she's faced. I know she's been taken down by what, each of her last like 6 opponents, both of her losses have come on the ground. And I think there's some upside for Lemos there too. It's just, again, without an early finish, is she going to be able to wrestle Rodriguez for 25 minutes? At this point, I don't really think that she can. So this is not like a fight that I'm attacking, I would say, from a betting perspective, but I am really interested in the outcome for like future fights, I would say. I expect Lemos to be very competitive early in the fight, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if she's winning the early rounds, but unless she can get a finish, I think Rodriguez's consistency and cardio probably takes over at some point. And so she would be my pick to win.
Yeah, I think I'm most worried about Lemos's chances when we look at the fact that Marina has never even been knocked down. And even when she's been taken down, controlled by the best wrestlers and the higher level submission artists, you know, she still hasn't been submitted, even in those really bad positions. She's shown to have the toughness, and she's shown to be able to dig deep. You know, the leg kicks from Waterson in round 2 and round 3, I'm like, oh man, like, you know, is this the changing point of the fight? Like, is this going to be it? And just never really ended up having that big of an effect going forward. So I think overall, I don't think Lemos finds a finish. Marina and like the Chronic Combat special, Marina and like over 2.5 or Marina round 4 or 5 decision, whatever we're allowed to play on BetMMA, that's probably the angle we're going towards.
I really just really struggle betting that over because I just don't know that. I do think it goes over. I just that yeah. Lemos just getting caught in that high elbow guillotine.
Yeah,
I mean standing arm triangle not, from. It's not going to happen here. But like just the like the, yeah, you're right. That's
just not like it's just Andrade like is much more aggressive getting to those positions.
Yeah. I didn't mean in terms of that. I just meant kind of like the nature of just not being there when you kind of expect them to be. But that's like they just kind of got caught. All right. I go wrap my brain around it. Cause that's I do. I do think the fight goes the distance. And if you really don't want to play a side, you know, +100 for one of these fights to go distance. What was the stat I saw today? Of the last 14 main events for women, right? All 13 of them have gone the distance. The only one that didn't involved Amanda Lemos. So it's like,
careful.
You know, you want it. Right, exactly. So you want to be on that side this time. I, you know, was it just kind of fluky or, you know, just
Marina and over 2.5 is -125. If you want to cut down some value and play in some implied, you know, what you think is going to happen. Listen, if Marina gets an early finish, I think everyone would be surprised, but
I do too. I mean, she finished. Yeah. The only finish she has is Amanda Ribas, who she had to finish twice.
That's fair.
So I don't know.
But yeah.
Yeah. I would guess the fight goes like over. If I just had to choose a side, just generally I lean toward fights extending. Mm-hmm. The only issue is like Lemos is like actually a very capable finisher in this division. Like she's got legit power and she's a good submission grappler. And both her losses have come inside the distance too. So it's really hard to feel comfortable, I would say, with either side of the over under.
Agreed.
Yeah. All right, great. Well, that'll bring us on to our next fight here. And we got Neil Magny versus Daniel Rodriguez. This one was booked for a month ago. Rodriguez has to pull out with the elbow infection. We get a rebooking here as the co-main event. Neil Magny, he's going to be 2 inches taller, 6-inch reach advantage, 4-inch leg reach. They're the same age. You know, you see all the experience for Magny in the UFC, but Rodriguez, I mean, he has all the experience in the streets, I guess. He said, what, he's like 200-0 or something? And sure, yeah, I don't know. He made some comment.
That was funny.
I guess ultimately what I feel like is that the guy that's the more dangerous finisher in this spot, I would say, is Rodriguez. I expect his hands to be more potent, especially against a guy like Magny, where like we see him get dropped by Max Griffin. And, you know, if we're to like kind of start tying some stuff in, it's like, well, we saw Max Griffin also like knock down Tim Means, but however, you know, Daniel Rodriguez, when he hurts Tim Means, he scoops up a guillotine and finishes him. So in that same respect, it's like Daniel Rodriguez in this spot against Neil Magny, instead of just knocking him down, do you think he would be able to find a finish? Cause you know, at least he's a little bit more finish oriented seeing his wins against, you know, your boy Dwight Grant. But yeah, so ultimately listen, Neil Magny -120, Rodriguez +100. I'm leaning towards the dog side here. I want to see their weigh-in and everything, make sure Rodriguez looks like he's there. But I think his volume is solid as hell. We've seen good cardio. I think he's willing to get back up if he gets taken down. And even if he gets put in the clinch and stuff, I don't think Magny will overwhelm him from a cardio perspective. I think he should be able to deal with it.
Yeah, I'm really, really – I go back and forth with this one a lot. I really like you said, I like Daniel Rodriguez's pace and output. Generally, one of the big problems of Neil Magny has been his lack of output and just lack of damage done on the feet in general. Like, just not really where he butters his bread. And with that being said, right, they're both 35. You've got a significant reach advantage for Magny. I don't know if D-Rod's ever faced something like that. And you've got, look at the fight minutes. 335 minutes of fight to UFC time for Neil Magny. I wonder if the UFC gamesmanship, veteranship comes into play here at all. And then additionally, maybe I'm just bitten by the dog. After watching TJ Dillashaw come into a fight injured, could shoulder. Yeah, dude, it's barely hanging on by a thread. If it comes out, you know, just no big deal. Let me keep fighting. D-Rod just had an elbow infection last month, literally a month ago, and they rebooked the fight. What elbow infection gets better in 3 weeks? Like, I don't, not a doctor, but like, if you're stiff and you can't fight it, it hurts. Or what is an elbow? Like, I don't know. That's weird.
I mean, it's probably like a skin infection or something that was located on the elbow is what I have to imagine.
So maybe it doesn't hurt. Like, I just don't know what the extent of that sort of damage is either. To me, I just kind of like pass on the side, at least for now. But I do think the fight goes the distance. I think that this fight should have been the main event because of that. And, I think the main event is probably the right main event in terms of importance for the division, just based in the hierarchy of the rankings. But I just kind of like this fight a lot is really why I want to say that. So, yeah, I go with the over, but that's super chalky. What, and maybe Brett's got something better for us.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, I think this fight, at least from a side perspective, like, comes down to how much success Magny can have in the clinch and with his takedowns. Because if the fight just plays out at range, I'm definitely on the Rodriguez side. Like, he's a more effective boxer, and he has far higher volume upside than Magny. And Magny's been knocked down and hurt a number of times throughout his career. So I favor Rodriguez in terms of minute winning ability on the feet and in terms of ability to inflict damage, even though it could play out competitively. Like, Magny's got that long ass reach, you know, he's 6'3", 6-inch reach advantage. He's a veteran and he will still probably make the rounds competitive, but I would lean toward Rodriguez. If the fight only played out in the feet, I'm just not totally sure how effective Magny will be in the clinch and on the ground. And I feel like I've underestimated him a lot throughout his career. I mean, there's, you know, Jeff Neal, a good example. Like, he was far more effective in that fight than I expected. So if he comes out here and just clinches Rodriguez to death and lands like one or two takedowns and edges out a decision that way, I won't be surprised. And it's hard to feel like super confident in Rodriguez, but like, unless Magny is dragging you down over and over, putting his hooks in, ground and pounding, he's not that effective as a grappler. And I do think Rodriguez is skilled enough defensively. I mean, he defends takedowns at 73%. He's got some submission grappling background. I think he can do enough to keep the majority of exchanges on the feet. So I kind of lean toward Rodriguez, but like, Magny is just generally more effective than I expect him to be, which is kind of the problem.
Well, one of the things that I did kind of forget to mention, and it's kind of what you're alluding to about Neil Magny, is that he's so good at slowing the fight down to his pace. The problem, is he doesn't have a high pace, but he will stifle his opponents to a much slower pace. And that's what you were saying, exactly what happened in the Jeff Neal fight. And if you look at the Robbie Lawler fight as well, and even the Rocco Martin fight, but really the Robbie Lawler fight, he just grinds on him against the cage and he just doesn't throw. That's what was always Robbie's thing though as well. But he wears on Jeff Neal. So it does keep me off the side. I'm always tantalized with dog odds, though, don't get me wrong. So I want to see some face-offs, maybe let these guys smell each other a little bit, but I'm going with the fight to the distance.
Well, let him get a good sniff out there. I get what you're saying. I mean, listen, if you're waiting for face-offs, I think it's pretty clear, unless Magny sucked out, he's gonna quote-unquote look more impressed, but he's gonna be standing over Danny. So I think the real question is, you know, what do you really think this fight, how it's going to play out here, because I don't think either guy's really shown us issues on the scales. And I think you can expect a size advantage in one direction, unless, you know, Daniel comes out here like Conor McGregor, fresh off of no USADA test for 6 months thick. I don't think we're going to see anything too crazy, because both guys are,
I just don't know how much D-Rod has been training in the last 3 weeks either, dealing with an elbow infection, what kind of shape he's in. Did he peak already? Like,
shout out Dez, because it's like, sometimes you just can't fight because you might pass it on and you'll get suspended like Ilir Latifi for not reporting your infection rather than it actually is doing anything. Because, I mean, it seems like if you go scout his Instagram, I mean, it seems like he's been doing stuff. And he's never been a guy that has ever really come in out of shape. Bet two units, fight goes a distance. Yeah, I mean, listen, it's pretty chalky out there.
I like that.
I get it, though.
That's exactly how I feel, too, Daz. I'm literally 100% with
you. But Daz is all about winning bets right now, man. Daz has been going crazy. Yo, shout out the chat, Dirty Reg, Daz. Make sure you guys keep it popping, like, and subscribe and everything, because we are sliding on to the fight that everyone's been waiting for, the people's main event of this card. And I'm surprised why this one's not the main event, honestly. You have Chase Sherman versus Josh Parisian. This is the type of one that should be, honestly, open up pay-per-views. That's how much people want to see it. But anyways, pay-per-views. Yeah.
We got 70,000 people arenas.
All right, so pull off the mask. All right, so we got -130 Chase Sherman and +110 Josh Parisian. Over 2.5 for this slap fest is +130. Under 2.5 at -160. I lean Parisian, but let's just say when you're getting dropped pretty badly by Alon Badeau in round one, I really can't trust you against a guy like Chase Sherman that seems to be at least able to manage his cardio a little bit better. But then the real question is, like, how many takedowns will it take for Chase to just be like, all right, I'm done. Like, you know, it's like he's got the Alon Badeau effect at the same time. So how much do you really want to trust either guy? Are we running to Guru's grandma's house? Are we digging in the cushions for a prop play? Because honestly, I'm leaning Parisian to plus money. It just feels like one of those ones at the end of the day, I'm upset that I wasted my money on even betting this fight. But I'll give Guru a chance to find me a prop he could convince me on for, like, once again, grandma's couch cushions. Let's see.
Do I even have a cat prop for this fight?
I don't know. Man.
This fight is super sloppy, man.
Sloppy Joe.
Chase Sherman, you know, has the very clean, crisp boxing, right? Great footwork. I mean, he really is a pretty good boxer. So shout out Chase. Problem is that he was on a 4-fight losing streak before beating Jared Vandera in the third round. So, you know, Jared kind of
went to Jared.
Yeah, Jared's kind of a moving punching bag in terms of that. So that was a good win for him. I'm not sure if he's going to be able to put Josh away where, you know, Josh has taken a much longer time to be put away, at least as of late. You know, his last, you know, a submission loss at Lights Out Championship via Kimura. That was in 2019. But otherwise, you know, it took Dante Mays 3 rounds to finish him, put him in elbows from crucifix. I guess that fight could have been stopped maybe a little bit earlier than that too. But I just think that even though he did get really badly rocked by Alon Badeau, I just think that he does have the grit and the heart to kind of push through. Whereas Chase Sherman has not only shown that he doesn't necessarily have the power to finish anybody, starch people, especially since not on the roids, that he's, like you said, TB, he completely lacks the grit and the heart. He will totally fold and, you know, take his check and move on and try to not take too much damage to fight again another day type of thing. Mm. So I wouldn't put my money on him. I had leaned this fight, line this fight, pick him. So to see the line kind of sliding to Josh Parisian towards the dog kind of makes me more excited to kind of maybe take a stab under grandma's couch cushions on a dog play. But, even the heavyweights still like to see these guys face off. I'm probably going to say that for every fight now. It's my new thing. What do you got, Brett?
Yeah, I mean, it's really obviously really hard to feel confident in either side. I sort of lean toward Sherman only because I feel like if this fight plays out on the feet, I just think he's a little bit more effective as a boxer. And the issue is that he's got, you know, the head the size of a watermelon. So like no matter what opponent he's facing, he's going to get hit a lot. And so at heavyweight, you know, when you're talking about win equity and like path to victory, either of these guys could hurt each other. Either of these guys could win by knockout. Even if I was to favor Sherman, it wouldn't be so far in that direction. But like he does manage his cardio a little bit better, I would say. Like Parisian, just in extended striking exchanges, really he has that one fight against Parker Porter, which he lost and he got beaten up. And Yeah, he beat Roque Martinez, and I just...
It's the worst fight you could ever watch. He looked so sloppy. That was the definition of a slop fest.
Yeah, and by the way, how have these guys not fought before? Every time I see, like, a low-level heavyweight matchup, I'm like, no, okay, these two must have fought before. I cannot write this matchup up again, but no. Parker Porter and Josh Parisian is a different matchup than Chase Sherman, different matchup than Jared Vandera, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, I lean a little bit toward Chase Sherman if the fight plays out in the feet. I just think he's a little bit more effective as a boxer, a little bit higher volume upside, a little bit more durable. But then Vandera, you know, probably has more grappling upside. Sherman, like, I forget which one you referenced it, but is not strong defensively in terms of his takedowns and in terms of his get up and scrambling ability. But are we really you know, backing Parisian here, relying on this guy to wrestle and hold Sherman down and have success on top? That makes me very uncomfortable. I think it's certainly a possible outcome and potentially one of the main paths to victory for Parisian, but, you know, taking down Alan Baudot a couple times, I don't know. Do you guys think Alan Baudot or Chase Sherman is better on their back? Because I would probably lean Sherman, but that's no real confidence.
I was literally about to say, because I know Alan Baudot has no idea what to do on his back.
Right.
I think Chase Sherman maybe does, but is generally too tired to do it.
And he at least fought Alexander Romanov and, like, got up a couple times from Romanov before he was eventually finished. Like, if he can get up twice from Romanov.
He doesn't have
group. Yes, I was just going to make that same point.
Does Parisian, though? Does Parisian have better top control than Romanov? Oh,
God. No. But does he have Jake Collier top control?
Right.
Can he hurt him first and then, like,
just be fat on top of him?
I think Collier's all right. I think Collier has a little bit understanding of
You're right.
submission grappling, which I am not sure Parisian does have. But if you call me up on Sunday and I didn't watch the fights and you say, hey, Parisian won this fight, he took Sherman down, laid on him, beat him up, and won, I wouldn't be that surprised. So
right.
It's a hard fight to cap. It's a hard fight to feel comfortable in.
I just don't know how to cap anything anymore when Trayshawn Gore gets a round two submission. It's crazy.
You know, like, it's interesting because it's when there's a lot of data in fights, it's easier to kind of identify what a betting line should be, at least for me. And you don't see as much swings. But when there's fighters like Gore or who are, like, a lot of fighters on this card who have just a couple fights in the UFC or less, that, like, the odds that they give you, like, it could just be so dramatically incorrect because there's just not enough data. And that's the thing with, like, Gore, like, Fremd and Gore. Fremd had one fight in the UFC, and, like, if we had seen what we had seen after his fight against Gore, he wouldn't have been as big of a favorite as he was heading into the matchup. So it's interesting.
It was just so weird because, like, TB had pointed it out, like, just to not get submitted with 15 minutes of grappling with Anthony Hernandez, but to get submitted by Gore is just, like, just shows the crazy variance of the sport.
Yep.
That made me so mad watching it. Like, it was legitimately, I think I saw someone post something where it was like, you know, me trying to hold back my 60-pound pit bull from, like, mutilating your toddler. And it's like him holding on to him as he's, like, jumping off the cage with his legs. It's like, he doesn't have any hooks in. He's literally just, all right, I'm going to strangulate you. Like, friend, you were winning from distance with, like, the jab, and then God.
Gore literally just went full, this is not a UFC fight, this is not a contract. Like, he went full, one of us is dying, and he would have killed him.
That was crazy. What's interesting there is, like, because you said he fought off Anthony Hernandez pretty well, but then when he was put in that choke against Gore, like, the only thing that he tried to do was essentially, like, bail out and jump off the cage and flap around when you need to address the hands that are choking you immediately. Yes. Like, you otherwise there's just no time. And so that's why he went unconscious as quickly as he did. It's like,
and you're expending all the extra energy instead of just staying calm. Exactly. Right. Like, That'll cut out your blood flow.
I think he was so shocked that he got caught. And I think, and I know based on how the choke was locked in, Gore is just so fucking strong that he just was like, Jesus Christ, what is this? And that was it.
All right.
So that was a cool recap. There we go. Thanks for that, Brett.
All right. Our next fight here, we got Tajir Ulanbekov versus Nate Mayhem Manis. Listen, man, they're the same age. Nate comes in dropping down to 125 for the first time. If you're interested on how all that was going and what the reasons were behind it, make sure you jump out of here. Go check our interview with Nate Mayhem Manis a few weeks ago as he was getting into, you know, the steady part of his camp here. So, yeah, there's a little bit of bias, Chronic Combat side. We've had Nate on a couple times for some great interviews. One time he did a full card breakdown with us also. So got to love the guy. But listen, he's coming in with a 3-inch height, 2-inch reach, 1-inch leg reach. He's the plus 185 dog, minus 215 for Tajir. And listen, you watch the Umar fight and you got to just think like, listen, Tajir, if he puts his mind to it and chains his takedowns together, you got to imagine he should be able to just sit on top. But I feel like sometimes it's not as easy, you know, and maybe I'm super biased in putting on my Homer cap, but, you know, I'll be digging into grandma's couch. I'll be throwing a little dog play in Nate. But myself, you know, I'm not advocating for the fans to do it because the analysis is telling me that Tajir really isn't that bad on the feet. Like, he's a solid boxer. And, you know, he should use that to get inside and take the back, put in a body triangle, and fish for submissions, even if he doesn't find them. So, but will the fan part of me and the Chronic Combat family part of me go ahead and place a little side play on Nate? You know, not track down Bet MMA or anything, but little $5 from grandma never hurt anybody, you know?
Can you give me a spoiler alert real quick? Because the 125 drop is, like, really concerning to me because Manes, he's huge.
Yeah. So he definitely didn't look great at the interview today, but I would say he's never been with, like, a high-level camp, and he's never had, like, a nutritionist or anything. So he went with the PI, and this is the first time he's had, like, meal prep done for him from, like, the I forget the name of the brand that all those guys get from the PI, but it's, like, included with being a UFC fighter. Trifecta, yeah. So he gets those meals. It's not, like, the best, but basically from what I'm gathering is, like, he understood after that Umar fight that, like, there really is no future for him at 135. So if he can't be a size bully down at 125, then, like, you know, he's expecting this would be a huge win, puts you in the rankings. You get a top 10 next, you get a top 5 after that. And hopefully, you know, but if not, you know, I think at least from talking to Nate, I'm not so worried about the cut. It's just like, I think he has high expectations of himself, and I'm not so sure he has the exact game plan necessary to pull off the win for me to trust him. But at plus 185, it's like, all right, well, I'm going to take a chance on my dog. You know what I mean?
I don't have anything else to say at all. I echo all the sentiments of TB fully. So yeah, we're pulling for you, Nate, literally. But yeah, I just think we were talking to him. He's just such a fucking hard worker. He's such a dog. He expects so much of himself. And he's such a talented fighter too. It's a tough ask to cut the weight and then still fight another grab. Like, you're not even fighting somebody that purely wants to stand and bang with you, which is what Nate really wants to do, because Nate's a showman. Nate really wants to not only perform but entertain. Mm-hmm. So it's mm-hmm. just the kind of guy that he is. Mm-hmm. And Tajir is just wants to will do whatever the fuck. So
I think Manes could win this fight. Like, yes, I think his first level takedown defense is pretty solid. And he's a physical fighter. So, and we've also, you know, Tagir barely beat who Bruno Silva and Nascimento. Like, I don't necessarily trust Tagir. I don't think he's some elite prospect. I don't like when I hear things like about the weight cut though, because, and it's not just Nate. I mean, there's tons of fighters who do this. Like, if I'm him, which I'm not, but if I'm looking at the loss to Umar, I mean, okay, Umar's a great fighter, but my takeaway there isn't I don't belong at 135. It's I need to figure out how to get back up to my feet. And so if his takeaway isn't that, then it just makes me concerned that the problem won't be fixed against Tagir, because Tagir more than likely is going to attempt takedowns. Maybe he'll get stuffed on the majority of them, but if he gets the fight to the ground twice and Maness hasn't improved upon his scrambling ability, his get up time, I just feel like Ulan Bekov's going to have an opportunity to take the back, and maybe he won't get a submission because Maness has fought off a number of people by this point, but including Umar, but he was controlled for the vast majority of that fight and just wasn't very effective there. So I do think Tagir's the deserved favorite here. He would be my pick to win. But I'll be very interested to see how Maness looks once he gets past this weight cut and actually into the cage, because what is he, 5'10"? Like he's a super physical fighter. And like, if he can actually manage this weight cut, I wouldn't be surprised if he had a little bit more, if he was able to keep the fight standing longer than some expect and maybe have some more success boxing than some expect.
I actually agree with you. And when you really say it like that, it makes me think that the line is a little too wide. Mm-hmm. Like Nate will do fine at the weight cut. He will have 24 hours to replenish himself. And yeah, I think then if he really has recovered, I think he's got a really damn good shot to put Tagir out, because I don't know that Tagir has faced somebody on the feet like Nate in terms of, like, you know, at least pressure, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he hasn't.
Pace at distance?
I mean, he's mostly fought, like, small grapplers. It's just, but again, it's if Maness can make the weight and he's also, you know, improved upon his get-up scrambling ability, then this line is too wide. If he hasn't, then, you know, we're probably going to see this fight take place on the ground for more than he wants. But hey, if he's your boy, I'll root for him. I'll throw a couple extra lineups with him on DraftKings too.
Might as well, right?
Yeah, he's a really solid guy. So good luck, Nate. We got you.
Yeah. So our next fight here, we got Grant Dawson versus Mark Madsen. Short notice for Grant Dawson stepping up as Madsen lost his opponent and was looking for – it was Dana White looking for a fight.
Those are great fucking cards. Those are fun things to watch, bro. I love that shit.
All right. Before we digress too much, I will actually be quick on this one. Grant Dawson minus 215, Madsen plus 185, over 2.5 minus 210, under 2.5 plus 170. Grant Dawson finally found someone who had to accept a fight against him because he wanted to keep his training camp and fight together. And I don't blame Madsen, but realistically, the O is probably going to go here. And Dawson is one of those guys where Madsen hasn't faced someone with the combination of like enough distance striking with enough volume wrestling and enough cardio and finishing ability. And Madsen's gas tank just isn't trustable to win 2 out of 3 rounds against a guy like that. So even if Dawson can't finish him, which I don't think he does, and the over 2.5 is already juiced anyways, it's just like, I'll find a way to work Grant Dawson in a parlay one way or another here. But like, I got to start keeping these favorite parlays super small because it's getting a little bit fucking ridiculous out here. And that's me. This is the only part where I'll digress here. This is, you know, part of the chronic combat needing to turn it around too, is like, you know, we get excited early in the week. We'll throw this shit before weigh-ins and everything, like on these big favorites because the line's going to move, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, if you're betting big favorites, you better make sure that they're going to fucking win and that you feel good about it all the way through. And if we do feel good about it all the way through, instead of throwing 4 units to win 2 on each, you know, find your favorites that you like a lot. Put them together for like a 1-unit parlay. And if you can get, you know, a 2-unit profit off that, great. And if one of those guys fucks you over, great. You lost 1 unit on the week instead of like 5, 6. And then you drop your parlay and another prop and you're sitting there wondering what you did. And, you know, it's a sad
So day. For me on this fight, which is a very interesting, I think it's an interesting matchup because Grant Dawson's not necessarily somebody that, you know, is like classically trained wrestling, right? But he, actually he is University of Nebraska. Duh. He is classically trained. That's what he does all the time. He is a wrestler. And what's interesting about Grant, though, is he's not as well versed in the striking, but he's actually serviceable enough, which is right. You see that in his pace at distance at 14 strikes there, right? I that's what I would say. So I think with Mark Madsen, who's generally not been right, he hasn't really fought anybody that decent, right? Ving Pichel, like, didn't go, he's a grappler that didn't go out there and grapple. Clay Guida didn't grapple against him either. Austin Hubbard, wasn't that Austin Hubbard's debut? Or that was Austin Hubbard's second fight and Madsen's debut. So it's I don't know. I just haven't seen enough from Madsen to really think that he's gonna be able to implement his own wrestling game on Grant Dawson and inversely, like, win on the feet either, because I think they're basically even on the feet, if not Grant a little bit better. And despite Madsen's Olympic wrestling background, I think that Grant's general college background is going to be good enough to stifle Madsen and make it really difficult for him. And I think he's always got to go.
I think it's fair to favor Dawson in this matchup. I just wish we had a little bit more data on Madsen defending takedowns, because, you know, yeah, his Olympic level wrestling may not be everything, but it also doesn't necessarily tell me Dawson's just going to take him down with ease and hold him down and submit him. I do think Dawson's a better submission grappler and does have back take upside, which Madsen, if Madsen's winning this fight, it's probably edging out competitive striking exchanges or taking Dawson down kind of over and over and kind of letting him back up. I don't really think he's going to be able to control Dawson in any way or finish him. One concern that I have with Dawson still is I'm unsure if his cardio is that great either, because, like, it's looked good at times, but then it's only two fights ago where he, like, literally took Ricky Glenn down and held him down for 8 out of the first 10 minutes, just laid on him. And he was so exhausted that he was beaten to a pulp in round 3. And so I just don't know, like, why that happened and whether it's going to happen again. And, you know, Madsen doesn't have spectacular cardio himself either. So it's not like I favor Madsen dramatically in that direction, but I mostly just favor Dawson because of the control ability. Assuming Madsen can get a couple takedowns, which I think is fair to project, I just don't see much control upside. If Dawson gets a couple takedowns, which I think is also fair to project, he could take the back and he could threaten for submissions. And then if the fight plays out on the feet, I don't know. I'd probably assume it's competitive. Neither guy really, lands at a super high rate. Dawson's defending strikes at 45%. That's a concern for me. So I would expect kind of slower paced, somewhat competitive exchanges. And I think kind of the winner of the fight probably is going to be determined by who's having success on the ground. Because if either guy's losing the striking exchanges, they're going to want to mix it up with wrestling. So I kind of think it's just going to be determined by the wrestling and control game, which I'll lean in favor of Dawson. But I don't know that I would be comfortable personally playing him at this betting line.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think a -215 is certainly a bit steep when their paths to victory are similar. And you're totally right. Grant Dawson's cardio has been the one has been the one turd in the punch bowl for him. It's been his big concern.
And he's coming off a third round submission, so it's like I don't want to completely discredit it, but I also don't want to discredit it the other direction. Like I need him to, right now I'm just skeptical. Like I just need to see him fight into the third round in two decisions more. Because at this point I'm just going to assume he's going to be successful early in fights as opposed to late in fights.
Mm-hmm.
All right. All right. I respect that. And that's why we got to keep our parlays light. Even if you think they got the advantage at the end of the day, you are risking a lot with a guy that big of a favorite. And that's why I'm preaching about keeping those parlays light, especially as we add legs. So as we move on here, we got our next fight, Derek Minner, Shaila Nurdembeka. What is that? The Wolverine, right? Wolverine. So we got Derek. So Nurdembeka, 1-inch height. Same reach, essentially 3-inch leg reach advantage for Derek Minner, who is going to be 4 years older. You look at most of the, especially striking stats and even a few of the grappling stats there. I mean, Minner is going to have a bit of an advantage. It's just, if this fight gets outside of one round, you just really got to put the ball back in Shailan's court. And he's not going to take the Charles Rosa approach of, as long as I don't get choked out, I'm still a winner. but yeah, so Derek Minner round one is kind of my approach here. I don't want to touch plus 175 because there's no fucking point to play money line on Derek Minner. Either play Derek Minner inside the distance, Derek Minner round one, Derek Minner and under 1.5, even if like you're getting really frisky. But I think all that's unnecessary. So, you know, because if you do the fight props and rounds and, you know, methods of victory, I think you can really find your way if you think you're on the Derek Minner side, which I think I am in this case, because I don't like betting a guy that I think is going to win a decision at minus 205.
100%. I'm not exactly sold on Shailan getting a finish, as he's only really had submission finishes as of late. And while Derek Minner can be submitted by the likes of Grant Dawson, I'm just not necessarily convinced at, like you said, this minus 205 line. What is interesting to me, though, is Derek Minner by submission at plus 350, because you can even, you know, add that to round one or
plus 700 round one. Exactly. Round one submission plus 700. That I've been waiting to say. So you lined it up for me. Thank you.
So, like, if you really want to take a lottery cushion, a lottery ticket, grandma's couch cushion type of play, I think that's an interesting shot, because this dude has been submitted 6 times before, right?
I like that. Grandma's lottery cushion. Yeah, and he's been submitted 6 times. You're correct.
6 times. 6 sub-losses. There it is. Grandma's, and yeah, and listen, how about, wait. And
is Derek that 6 sub-losses for Shaw?
Yeah.
Dang, he's been submitted 6 times. Yeah.
And you know what?
Because he has 500 fights, so it's like,
right.
Do we? But that's the other thing. What's the fight to just end by submission in general? They both have been submitted a million times. That's a prop definitely on FanDuel. I don't see it on DraftKings at the moment.
Good point, good remix.
Oh my goodness. Thank you, Yoda TV. But yeah, I don't see. Oh, here it is. Oh my god, fight to end by submission plus 200.
Wow, that's actually kind of sexual.
So, shout out Aaron Bronstetter for turning me on to that kind of prop. But this fight to end by submission at plus 200 is super interesting, because I'm not necessarily convinced in a small cage that this one goes the distance. So, fuck it. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, I mostly agree with you guys too. I would be on the underdog here as well, and Shaw could win this fight. I mean, we've seen most of the time that Minner gets outside of round one, he tends to implode. So it's like, if he has success early and then he just doesn't finish the fight, and Shaw can take him down in round two and round three, like a TKO or submission is in play for Shaw. But my problem is, I just don't think, like, from a wrestling perspective or submission grappling perspective, that Shaw is really better than Minner. I think Minner has a, you know, both guys have a long regional scene career, but Minner has fought better competition, and he's like, he just passes the eye test more for me than Shaw. I'm trying to pull up Shaw's stats here, and UFC stats is not loading at all, but like, Shaw was giving up takedowns to Sean Soriano, and he's giving up his back to Sean Soriano. He's giving up his back to TJ Brown, and he barely got by Josh Koulibal, if he even won that fight at all. I can't
which
remember.
Stat were you looking for? We have him right here. Oh, you mean individual fight?
Yeah, individual fight. But
that's coming next year.
Oh, you're pulling it up for MTV?
No, no, I said that's coming next
year. Oh, you're going to add it next to the thing. Okay, never mind. Because we do it by spreadsheet, right? I mean, by slideshow right now, as opposed to our active database. But we do have that information. So sorry.
Yeah, so in the future, we are looking to have it.
But point being that I feel like Minner, even if his path to victory is somewhat dependent on having grappling success early, I think that's very realistic. I think he can very realistically get this fight to the ground early and take the back and threaten with a submission, and maybe he doesn't end up winning. But I mean, at plus 175 even, I don't hate that line. And if you want to take shots on round one submission and or combos, like, I think that's a decent prop option for this fight for sure.
Eric Betts.
What's going on, brother? How are you, man? Great to see you.
Thanks for showing up, buddy. I really appreciate that. When I really look back at the tape, though, specifically, if we just want to look at Derek's last fight, he doesn't even, like, win a round versus Ryan Hall. Not even that first one. Not with the striking, not with any of the grappling that he could have done with wrestling top control, because there was no – he didn't get submitted. Like, he didn't win a round. So after watching that, like, who's more physical – let me ask you, who's a more physical striker, Shaylin Nurnenbeck or Ryan Hall?
But Ryan Hall is so far superior as a submission grappler to Shaw. Like, I think you're right on the physicality, but like I don't think there like was an opportunity for Minner to really win rounds in that fight. Cause he's either on top of Hall, in which case Hall's diving for leg locks, or he's trying to strike with Hall, in which case Hall's still diving for leg locks. So it's just the dynamic of that matchup.
He just refused to keep it standing too. He was winning when he was actually whenever he connected with his strikes, which was rare, but when he did, it was working. He just didn't continue with it.
I'm willing to overlook that fight personally.
Yeah, I like it. Okay,
Hall is a really unique matchup, I think.
Yeah. What I love about, you know, having you on this show right now, you fit right in, man. You get the idea of this show. A lot of betting breakdown shows, you come in, you present your information, just different sides, whatever, you just move on. I love that's the name, the Chronic Combat Conversations. It's the discourse, asking each other questions, having an active conversation about these fights, because that's what we love to do. So you really fit that perfectly, man. So I'm really happy to have you here.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what it's all about.
Let's get it.
So here we go.
The rematch that everyone has been clamoring for.
Yes.
So much so they had to rebook it.
Yeah, yeah. Miranda Maverick, minus 610 versus the plus 460, the Shanimal, Shanna Young. Shanna does have, I mean, geez, what is it, a 5-inch height advantage, 4-inch reach advantage, 5-inch leg reach. And if she added to her experience, like, at all in the grappling realm, you would think it'll look a little bit better than last fight, right? And, you know, Stephanie Egger fight, you know, it wasn't the best, but I think you could almost argue early stoppage. And as the line's minus 610 here to plus 460 Shanna Young, and I'm searching for landmines along this card, and I'm seeing Miranda Maverick online asking for sponsorships to further her future pro wrestling career. And I'm just like, I'm curious if we can see some sketchy MMA at work. With like an elbow that opens up a cut that leads to a this or that, or if Shanna just like leveled up at Syndicate, you know, working, you know, iron sharpens iron, you know, or whatever lower level steel, or I don't know. I don't know, man. I'm like itching to take a dog shot here. I sure as fuck am not playing Miranda Maverick at minus 610. And if I was, why would the over 2.5 be minus 120 for someone that's minus 610? The implied idea is that the finish is coming, but the whole thing is that under 2.5 is a minus 110. So either the bookies really fucked up this line, or we're getting an extremely boring Miranda Maverick decision. And she finished her the first time, so maybe that Shanna Young's like big win this time is that she doesn't get finished. Like, is that what it is? Like, I don't know.
This isn't a super exciting fight for me. Like, it's just, I didn't even realize it was a rematch until like a couple hours before the podcast, when I was looking into this one more. And I think, you know, what is Shauna Young's path to victory even here? Like, does she have any chance to win inside the distance? Because, like, not that I would consider betting Shauna Young personally, that's not my type of bet, but like, she's probably even got a lot better decision odds, because I would be really shocked if she knocked Maverick out or submitted her. Maverick is just probably superior everywhere, and it's either the fight plays out exactly like the first time, or, yeah, like you said, Shauna Young is gonna, you know, get her hand raised in her own heart by simply surviving past the over 2.5.
Miranda inside the distance of +110. Fuck this fight. I'm trying to learn a lesson.
Yeah, dude. Fight.
I'm
glad you guys kind of were able to throw a little information in before I could say respectfully, fuck this fight. And from a gambling's perspective, because like you just said, like Miranda Maverick by finish is +110, but Miranda Maverick by decision is +130. It's like, they don't know, and neither do we. Fuck it. She probably wins more likely than not. I get it. If you're really a degenerate and you have to put it in your parlay, go for it. But I don't know what a -610 for you is doing in your parlay other than making it more risky to not hit. So moving on.
Take that money and put it towards Miranda Maverick's pro wrestling career.
Maybe don't do that. That would have been the funniest thing you've ever done.
All right, so we got Mario Bautista versus Guru will tell you why, but it's Benito fucking Lopez. Because I built this whole fucking database and a system of profiles. It's been 3 fucking years since Benito Lopez has fought, and like 1 month before I would have made a profile for this motherfucker. But I'm tempted at +245. And Mario Bautista at -295. Benito coming in, 1-inch height advantage, 1-inch reach, 2-inch leg reach. You know, he's 1 year younger. Oh my God, you add up all those things at 60%. If it's 40%, then you're still getting like plus EV, right?
Jesus.
But my fucking point is like, okay, unless you're training with Benito Lopez on a day-to-day basis at Team Alpha Male, how can you confidently bet Mario Bautista at -295? Unless you're training with Benito Lopez at Team Alpha Male, how can you confidently bet Benito Lopez at +245? So it's maybe just fight doesn't go? Or do you think it's like Mario and over? Like, I'm having a tough time finding an angle because such a long layoff. And, you know, I mean, yeah, I lean Mario Bautista. But, I mean, I've seen the guy get chinned by Trevin Jones.
There have been no like actual reasons as to why he's had a layoff this long, right? Because Benito is from Oroville, which is right next to where I went to college at Chico. So he would come into the gym, him and Tyler Diamond, and there's Nick Maximov, and a lot of these other guys are from that area. So I've followed Benito for a long time, like well before his pro career, and like, he's like a really good dude, and he's skillful. Obviously, he's in the UFC. I have no idea why he's been off for this long. And like, I know he's been injured at times, but like, I heard an ankle injury. I do not think an ankle injury keeps him out for 3 years. And I haven't seen much of him training at Alpha Male either. I have seen pictures of him training with Tyler Diamond up back in Oroville. So I wonder if he has the same affiliation with Alpha Male anymore. And like, without having a full depth of understanding of what has happened in the last 3 years, it is literally impossible to know. Like, I think there's a really good chance that Benito comes in here not in the best shape, not having trained with the best partners, and just looks terrible. Or maybe he's actually improved in the last 3 years. And if that's the case, plus 245 might not be a horrible play. I mean, the thing about Benito is like he is a true fighter at heart. Like he will go to war with you. And what I'm hoping for is just like basically a war, like a high paced scrap. Because if Bautista's going out here wrestling and looking to control Benito, he probably is going to have an advantage. But I mean, of the two, Bautista is the one who's been dropped more often in the UFC, and he's been knocked out in the UFC. And I don't think it would be that crazy for Lopez, assuming he has improved over 3 years, has been training with a good team, to like make exchanges competitive, especially if they're going to trade at a high pace. There's so much variance in striking exchanges, but without knowing that, you kind of just got to assume there's something going on, and Bautista is a really talented fighter himself. So I'm expecting Bautista to look pretty good here.
I really lean Bautista here, and there's a bunch of reasons as to why, other than of course the questionable things that will inevitably keep me off of betting this fight. What I do know as a fact is Benito Lopez in his last fight doesn't throw any strikes against Vince Morales, who we know is not a very good fighter. Vince Morales is very just C-level at kind of everything, right? So Benito doesn't throw any punches. He's throwing all kicks. It's kicks versus punches. And if only Vince would just continue to come forward and strike with him, he could knock him out, finish Benito. But Benito kind of dances around a little bit with his leg kicks and is fairly talented at that and wins the fight. Good for him. I know in this last 3 years off that he's gotten his real estate license and he sells real estate. He's actively posting about real estate. So I know that he's doing that. Those are the things that I know. So I also know that Mario Bautista, while he hasn't necessarily fought the highest level of competition in his last two wins with Brian Boom Boom and Jay Perrin, he's at least been active. And that Benito Lopez, when he was active, was already in the same realm as Brian Kelleher and Jay Perrin.
Oh, no.
And I certainly would think, in terms of coming back now, he's still in that same kind of caliber. So I do like Mario Bautista here to get it done. Especially, you want a leg kick with somebody? Go okay. Leg kick with Mario Bautista, guy.
All right.
That's how I feel. But, there's so much sketchy stuff in MMA. Do I have to go back to Trayshawn Gore? Like, how many? We don't have to go there. We can go a million fights. So, yeah, I'll probably end up. Yeah, you go.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Go ahead, bro.
I'm just hopeful because, like, you made a good point about Benito not throwing that much against Morales. And, like, the thing is, he had a more high-paced fight against against the other Morales and against Steven Peterson. I think he needs someone to like really push him. And like Vince Morales is kind of just, I'm going to throw a few punches at range and like not try and engage. And I'm like just out loud wondering what Bautista is going to do. Cause we've seen Bautista be hesitant at times, like against, Miles Johns. But then we've seen him absolutely go to war too against Jinsu Sun. So like, I'm hoping he's going to want to try and go to war with Benito. Because at the very least, if that happens, this fight's going to be a hell of a lot of fun.
I agree with that. I agree. And I think we're going to see a little bit more of Benito than we might expect. But what I am willing to do is go ahead and close out a three-leg sketchy parlay if you dare to follow. Because we're looking at plus 192. We got Marina Rodriguez. We got Grant Dawson and we got Mario Bautista. And if you like, juiced favorites and you think, hey, they have a solid chance of winning and I wouldn't play any of them, separately given their line, but you throw all three together for plus 192, it's like at least there's a chance to make a little money off of a three fight parlay. So I think, if anything, I think that's a fun way to play those.
What fights. Is it without Grant Dawson?
I think it's still minus money because Bautista's minus 295 and Marina's also like minus two something. So I think you're I'll look it up for you right now. Let me plug it in while you patiently await.
Thanks, man. So I guess you might as well pull up the hit the slide for the next fight.
Oh, jeez, you're asking me to do so many. Don't you have access to this?
I don't know how to do that. Wait, come on, man. Now you're asking too much of me to know how to work things.
The guru. Come on, man. How many shows have we guys did? Back that line. Look, let's pull back the curtain. This is what happens. Okay.
No.
Sorry, Brent. Mom and dad are done.
What's the line arguing, boy? Let's go.
All right. You got it yet? No, I don't got it because
all right, so pull it up.
I got all hot and bothered.
Oh my god.
So the line is -104, and I know you're a slut for that plus money.
No, -104 is awesome. I'm in for -104. That's what I like better.
Oh, you are.
Yeah.
I mean, all right. So what? But for one unit, because that's all.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Okay, one unit. So 1.1 to win one.
Sure. Sounds great.
Pending weigh-ins.
Love it.
Fair enough. Pollyanna, I dress like anime characters, which is cosplay, Viana.
Yes.
Versus Jin Yu Fry. I got subbed by Kay Hansen.
What is up with you giving them nicknames?
Because they're more fun when I give a nickname in my head than when they get their Pollyanna, the finisher, the violence queen. Like, I don't give a fuck. You know, I'd rather say something stupid.
All right, well, Jin Yu Fry does.
It's original.
Well, Jin Yu Fry doesn't have one, so you can give her one. But Pollyanna Viana is Dame de Ferro, which is Fire Queen, right?
Iron person. It's something about iron.
TB, maybe you reach out to the UFC as like an official nicknamer for every debuting fighter.
Yes.
I'm not sure the fighters would be happy with it, but.
I think he should quit his day job and just do that.
I can give them a cool one, and then there's like the Chronic Combat one too, you know? Like, because some of these just really fucking
dude,
suck.
Don't you dare affiliate your nicknames with my show. I don't want any part of that. You can take all the credit. Those are TB Scouting MMA's nicknames. You can follow him there for those nicknames, guys. I don't want any part of that.
Please,
I don't want any
Please like and subscribe for all of our arguments on Chronic Combat.
Jesus Christ.
All right. All right, Dirty Reg, thanks for hanging out in the chat, guys. Make sure you're letting us know what your best bets are because I am pretty curious. Going Fry, I think if you get Polly to the third round, you beat her. I don't think you get her to the third round, though. I think that's the key because Polly is a little bit nasty with those elbows. She's actually kind of fun in the stand-up. I know she's -140, so fuck that. But you go over to the winning methods, and it's like, what was it, +350 submission on DraftKings? Listen, I know it's going to be better when it drops on FanDuel. They didn't have a line for me yet, Guru, so unless you can see one now, I wasn't there before. And Daz loves it, okay? You know, the people really appreciate all of our banter. So that's it. Pollyanna Viana, greasy submission prop of the week for TB. It's Pollyanna Viana. Like, all three of her wins in the UFC come by submission. Jin Yu Fry, as I gave her the nickname, I got subbed by Kay Hansen. That's just kind of what it is, you know what I mean? So, that's just kind of what it is. So, grandma's couch cushions because it's the greasy submission prop of the week for TV. But for now, I'll tell you, you know, Chronic Combat's name's not on that. Go ahead, Guru. You let us know what
you know. I really don't hate that stab either. To be quite honest with you,
he doesn't hate it.
I just wonder how Pollyanna's gonna get it to the ground. I do wonder that a little bit how we get there.
Oh, well,
Jin Yu Fry she's got decent takedown defense, and that I know that Pollyanna Viana's wrestling is not very good. So
if you want a juiced up line,
hit me.
Viana's -250 finish only. I don't see how Fry, I mean, obviously the sub prop is worth a shot too, but does Fry have any finishing equity at all? Is she going to knock Viana out or submit her? I'd be pretty damn surprised by that. I mean, she was submitted by Veronica Macedo, but and then without a submission, like if Viana does not win by submission, it's you're not going to really want exposure to her at all, because who the hell knows what this fight's going to look like if she doesn't win by submission. She's probably getting taken down a couple times, held down. Maybe striking exchanges are competitive, but I do think the finishing upside is pretty clearly in Viana's favor.
That makes sense. It does make sense.
No, and the books agree with you as well, as the money line finish only is minus 250 for Viana, whereas the money line decision only is 50-50. So, yeah, you know, Viana's really got the only finishing upside at all. So, if that's how you want to play it, that's probably where you take your little stab. Otherwise, you might as well.
Yeah, I don't mind that.
Yeah, so overall, I think that kind of sums up that fight. And here we go. This one is where it starts getting a little spicy for me. We got Ludvik Shalinian versus Johnny. Why did I ever trust you against Tony Gravely Munoz?
God damn it.
What? It's the truth.
That's not his nickname. The official Chronic Combat nickname.
No, that's not a Chronic Combat nickname. That is a TV scouting MMA nickname.
I love how Brett knows how to push the Guru's buttons.
Johnny Munoz is Kid Kidvenbo.
Yeah, exactly. You can't even say it, so just use my nickname. Like, what the
fuck? Shaolinian is Palmerios.
Okay, so if you didn't notice, I respected Ludovic, and I didn't give him a nickname. Because he fought, he was like on the front lines with like the Ukraine war and all that stuff. He had to drop out of his last fight.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was like, I forget who he was booked against, but it was for like the UFC, one of the UFC London cards. Nathaniel Wood. And so that's when Nathaniel Wood, did he get a new opponent or did they just cancel that one? Yeah. Oh, no, he did. And then that guy pulled out also on the day
up.
Yeah,
and then he moved up weight.
Yeah. But he got married in London instead while he was there. Like, what the, so Nathaniel Wood was like, what the fuck?
He got paid not to fight. He was like, fuck, I'm not cutting weight again, and I'm taking this money and having a wedding right now. Makes sense.
Smart.
No. It was the guy, not Nathaniel Wood, it was the other guy married. Or engaged, he proposed.
Ludvik Shalinian?
No. The guy that stepped in and then
I don't remember who that was,
but I remember Nathaniel Wood calling him out on Twitter for it. Being like,
it was Vince Morales.
Oh my god, no way.
Yes.
Yes, that's exactly what it was.
It was Vince Morales.
Vince Morales flies out there and then gets sick, like, you know, in the weigh-in process. They don't even make it to the scale. And then he ends up proposing to his girlfriend that flew out with him. And then Nathaniel Wood like posts about it.
Yeah.
And is like, yo, like, what the fuck? Like, did you just come out here to propose to your girlfriend and not even try to weigh in? So I thought that was funny. Anyways, Ludvik Shalinian +190 versus Johnny Munoz. Guru's nickname was stupid. -225. Shalinian.
Kibembo.
Yeah, fuck that. Ludvik Shalinian has a 1-inch height advantage. Everything else, even across the board. Except Ludvik is older by 3 years. I think Ludvik is also, to what Guru has taught, you know, reinforced me recently, wrestling is going to be the more advantageous, you know, practitioner as opposed to the jiu-jitsu. So while Johnny Munoz is trying to go ahead and scramble and do his Kid Kevembo Guru stupid ass nickname shit. Dude, it's your nickname, Odin.
It's his nickname. It's his actual nickname.
Sorry.
All right.
Ludvik Dog +190. Let's fucking go.
Yes. You can't lay even cracked out TB to make sense about saying that you really can't lay chalk on Johnny Munoz here at -225. That's fucking nuts. He's done nothing to deserve that sort of favorite in the UFC. He lost to our boy Nate Maness. He beat Jamie Simmons in a dicey fucking fight, and then at least for the first round, and then he gets absolutely annihilated by Tony Gravely by an uppercut that just completely puts him to sleep literally 5 months ago. So the problem with the Ludvik side, however, is you don't really like to see that loss to Ricky Tercios on Tough. Like, knowing what we know about Ricky now, it's just really, really not good. That being said, similarly, I guess Ricky's very tough to prepare for and understand. So maybe we give him the pass, like maybe Brett would like to say, or he said in the past. I kind of like that thought. And then because in the Jack Shore fight, while he gets whooped, he shows decent defensive grappling and tries to grapple Shore himself. So in a fight where Shore was supposed to be a cakewalk winner, made it look a lot tougher, at least than the scorecards say. So I guess I agree with Cracked Out TB. You got to maybe take a little shot on the dog here and Luvik. We got to hear from Brett, though. Where does the apple fall on this fight?
Well, the thing is, like, Sholinian, like, he had some decent defense, I suppose, against Shore, but he's just not that great at producing offense. And the different, I mean, why this line is where it's at is because I think Munoz is a considerably better submission grappler. Like, Munoz is a really, really good submission grappler. And despite losing that fight against Maness, like, if you go back and watch it, I mean, he got in on the hips of Maness and picked him up and slammed him down in the first round. Like, he can wrestle too. So I think there are going to be opportunities here for Munoz to land takedowns and immediately take the back and hunt submissions. Maybe he doesn't get it because we just saw Shore not get it. And the kind of like we talked about with Viana, the thing is if Munoz is not on the back hunting for submissions, then he might just be losing the fight outright. I don't know how this fight's going to look if it plays out on the feet. I think Munoz could win, but after getting knocked out by like a bunny shot against Gravely, I'm very concerned about his durability. And I'm worried about Sholinian's ability to produce offense, but
agreed.
One fight against Jack Shore, I'm afraid to just be like, oh, like this is who he is, because then he could just look totally different in the next fight. Of course, we have some Ultimate Fighter data as well, but I think it's fair to favor Munoz just because he's a better submission grappler and has more ground control upside in that sense. But yeah, I'd be extremely nervous to play a minus 225 line on him. And outside of that submission aspect, Sholinian like could land takedowns, could compete on the feet. And maybe in hindsight, the line looks wide. What's his submission prop? What's Munoz's submission prop?
I was just thinking that, bro.
That's the only one you could play. Sorry.
Yeah, that I love that prop actually, and they don't even have it on DraftKings.
Yeah, they don't have anything posted right now. So
yeah, I was looking for finish only there. I didn't see it either.
Yeah, switched off. Usually, dirty is if I switch off, especially switching from the dog to the favorite. That just means I'm gonna pass that fight. Like
I agree with that completely.
Just don't
at least from a money perspective. But yeah, I remember I don't know. I've picked Johnny Munoz well. I picked Johnny Munoz over Jamie Simmons, and I picked Tony Gravely over him. So like
I think he's good. Like, I think he could be a good unless we find out that the durability is actually like a real like if he gets knocked out again the first round.
That short uppercut was so powerful. Like
it, bro, literally... I watched it. I watched that fight 10 times. I still couldn't figure out like
TB. Can you? Like the physiology, do you understand that a little bit better? Why did that punch crush him? Do you remember the fight punch?
Which
Munoz and Gravely.
Munoz getting knocked out by Gravely. Did you watch that fight?
I like kind of did, but I would say sometimes
very Hold short on. Uppercut. Jesus, dude.
Sorry. I had like one belt.
Get it together.
No, belt up. So, anyways, I would say. The thing I noticed with some of those shots when they happen is like if a guy doesn't see it coming, it has a bigger effect. And that also tells me he doesn't have great striking defense because he's not aware of a shot like that. So could have been a bad cut. And I think it's also the combination of he didn't really see it coming.
Agreed.
So, but Gravely also has like underrated power in that regard too. Ask Nate Maness about that. So
true. I think we hammered this one out pretty good. We need a fucking prop though.
I was gonna say together. Fight doesn't go the distance could be interesting on either side given Munoz's bad defense. If this fight plays out anywhere else, and Shalinian, maybe he does get subbed by this superior grappler, I guess.
What's like Shalinian decision only? Like, that's what I want to know.
I don't think that's out yet. Either.
Of course not, because there's no props.
Yeah.
But I kind of.
It's not terrible.
Or just yeah, the rest like of that. The way we're guessing, because they don't have any props out for the rest of these fights. The only ones we have are the over-under, which are posted. So Carlos Condalario versus Jake Hadley. Condalario plus 215. Hadley minus 255. Over 2.5 minus 215. Under 2.5 plus 175. I think it's interesting. Once again, we have a fighter in the minus 255 range, and we're seeing a juiced over 2.5. And, you know, I really just hate trusting these younger fighters. Both of them coming from the same contender series type of idea. And like Hadley doesn't really have any significant advantage in any department, to where I think, you know, it's like, oh, I must ride this guy minus 255. It's like, you know, Nascimento is one of those guys where if you were that good of a wrestler, you should have tajiered him. You know what I mean? Like, but like dead ass, like you should have been able to at least get enough top control to get a split decision against a guy shooting for subs and stuff. You shouldn't have been getting controlled from top position against a guy in Nascimento who has been shown to give up bottom to other people. Like in one fight, 63% control for opponent. And that opponent was Nascimento, who normally is content to shoot for submissions from bottom. Like that's a bad sign for Hadley against a guy in Condalario that actually landed the takedowns on Tyra and is the one that's getting reversed. So if Jake Hadley's not getting a good enough scrambles against Nascimento, there's no fucking way I'm trusting the guy 0-1 in the UFC at minus 255. I'm just looking for enough reasons to pull the trigger on the dog. I just don't know if I'll get there.
I honestly end up agreeing with you once again, because as much as I kind of like the spunkiness of Jake Hadley's personality and kind of like that people don't like him type of thing, you're like my boy, Tatsuro Taira. Like, if you're not getting finished by my dog, like if he's not making quick work of you and going straight to in and out, like you're actually pretty decent in terms of not getting submitted.
Animal style.
Exactly, bro. You always got to get it animal style. I'm an East Coast guy, but where I live forever. But I know when you go out west, you have to do it animal style. That's the way. Either way, I don't think Jake Hadley necessarily is going to be able to get the sub here. So if you're not getting the sub, then I'm not taking you as minus 255 favorite. So Condalario's really got to show something, though, because if he doesn't get it done, he's going to be really staring down the barrel of a tough gun of his last fight of his UFC contract. What do you think there, Brett?
Yeah, I'm interested in some of the props on Hadley here, maybe too. I think you guys are right, and maybe a little bit wrong somewhere else. Like, I think Hadley is clearly a better submission grappler than Candelario. Like, and one of the issues with Condalario coming into the UFC is he didn't look great defending takedowns, and his submission grappling didn't look particularly good to me. And in his UFC debut, he survived Tyra, but like Tyra was on his back for a long period of time. And I think he like ended the fight in mount, like he got like some dominant positions. And so like, you can look at that and say, oh, that's good, Candelario survived. But you can also look at that and say, like, once again, he got himself put in some pretty disadvantageous positions. And I really think Hadley has potential to get to those same positions. I think Hadley could definitely take him down a couple times. I mean, Candelario, he was taken down 8 times on Contender Series, 4 times on Contender Series. He could definitely end a couple takedowns. Hadley's a really good back taker. And maybe he doesn't get a submission, but I think that's what I'd be worried about with Candelario. Where you guys are absolutely correct is Hadley has issues getting controlled himself. And he showed that in his UFC debut and on the Contender Series. And although I don't trust Candelario to go out there and land takedowns and hold Hadley down, Hadley has now proven in multiple fights that his takedown defense isn't very strong and he'll play guard longer than he should. So that might just happen again. I mean, that like
I also think
when you don't see a lot of striking stats up here, I think you're finally going to see some striking stats for these guys. Hadley is more than willing to get into a fucking banger. And Condalario is actually likes to strike. He's just been grappled. So
interesting.
When you mention Hadley can take his back, go for the backpack and go for the rear knee, that's Tatsuro Taira's specialty. That's his favorite fucking thing to do. So I really do, unless it's more fluky, Trayshawn Gore getting a sub type of shit, if Tatsuro Taira isn't getting it, I really do feel good that Jake isn't, because I think Taira is a better submission grappler than Jake. So, can I be wrong? Sure. I've been wrong before. I'll be wrong again. But I like that thought process. So I like Carlos as a dog shot.
And it's sort of what we've said now with a few fights here, where if Hadley isn't getting a submission, then I wouldn't want him at -255. I mean, he needs to get a submission at a high rate to really pull off this line. And if he doesn't, then the line's probably too wide and the fight's probably just going to be competitive.
Right. And they have the over 2.5 at -215. So it's like, Vegas, make up your mind, man. Like, what do you really think is... Is it just that they think Hadley is going to be popular? I know, but they're like, I'm just curious why they have it that way based on
Hadley has power. Hadley has power in his hands though, too. I don't want to completely discount that either.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So why wouldn't you put the under at a better pricing? I think it's too pushed far. It's too juiced on the over. For a fight where you expect Hadley to be a big finisher, blah, 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 -255. That's my point. I think you're getting it twisted.
Oh, no. I think now that I understand what you're saying, I think that makes a lot of sense.
I guess if Candelario had
more finishing potential,
then it would be easier. But
he doesn't really have it. I don't really expect him to get a finish on Jake. Because if Jake showed anything in the Alan Nascimento fight, he's a lead tough. So. Yep.
Got it. All right. Well, fair enough. I mean, this brings us to the beginning or the end, depending on how you look at it.
I love how you always say that.
It's always so awkward.
No, keep it going. I think that's your thing there. It's
good. Yeah. the guru approves of this one, but not of my nicknames.
No, not your fucking nicknames.
All right. Well, we got Tamira's What the Fuck Is She Doing in the UFC, Vidal?
No.
Versus, yes.
Trattora. Trattora. That's her nickname.
You tell me which one is better. Versus Ramona Guru Special Pasquale.
I'll take that because she doesn't actually have a nickname. And
there you go.
They could both be What the Hell Is This Fighter Doing in the UFC.
I would agree because Ramona's entrance is very similar to Tamira's entrance. At least Ramona has a couple fights. And I think that's why people are going let me take the dog money here on Ramona. And I'm like, now that I'm running through this card top to bottom, I'm like, that's way too many fucking dogs in a row that I'm like leaning towards. And it just seems like Tamira's, if anything, is getting a fighter where she probably gets a chance to win here. I just don't think I have any business betting on this fight, realistically, especially Vidal is taking hammer fist from bottom against Island Perez, gets kneed in the face from bottom against... Multiple fouls and penalties against
No. I'm just betting the fuck.
And like
I'm dog. You gotta be on the dog.
I know, but dog. Do I have to bet money on the dog? I can't pick the dog.
Yeah, you're a degenerate. You have to. Of course you do.
Okay, but because it's such a low confidence play.
Of course it is. That's fine. It's a grandma's couch cushion play. But Ramona is absolutely the play here. She has the UFC experience. She's fought good, serviceable, decent. Fighters in the UFC. I'm serious.
Serviceable. Decent.
What I really mean is that there's a certain fringe level that Jocelyn Nunes and Jocelyn Edwards are not, in my opinion, in. Josie They're like a level ahead of that fringe, and that's a tough ask to come into the UFC at. And when you look at this girl and has a dub on her record against a girl we just saw get into the UFC, shake her booty on the weigh-ins and then lose to Stephanie Edgar real quick.
We just saw that happen. That's her second to last dub to get her here, and she was getting whooped. No thanks. I'll take the dog that has been training at the UFC PI and Syndicate MMA and has a ton of UFC level high friends and is now in her third fight. And we just saw it can actually strike with a good kickboxer. And Nunes, like, yeah, she got lit the fuck up, but she's a dog. So whatever, take a little shot. Coin flip. To me, it's a coin flip at least, and I'm getting plus money on it. So I'll go to grandma's couch cushions for it. Brett, what do you got?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you don't have to put money on this fight, but I think the dog is the right side. Like Vidal looks like awful to me on tape. She looks really, really bad. I mean, I just don't. Her submission grappling is maybe okay, but I hate fighters who dive on guillotines and dive on leg locks. Like, if you're gonna dive on a guillotine or a leg lock, you better get it. Which she's done, so whatever. But like, her wrestling looks poor, her striking looks really poor. It's unfortunate to say all that and then say, well, she might still just run through Pascual. I'm not totally certain. Like, if she just went out there and dragged Pascual down, are you confident Pascual is getting back up to her feet? So there's an issue there. But like, I am very confident Vidal is not going to have sustained success in the UFC. I don't think Pascual is either, but I do think experience is important. And like, I'm fine taking the chance on her at the price she's at, because Vidal might just be a train wreck, and Pascual at least has shown small levels of competency that could be enough here. Really,
really, really interesting freaking card to break down, if I'm just being honest with you. Like, one of the weirder cards. I think as you get through towards the end of the year here, you're going to see a lot of fighters, like a ton of fighters start pouring in, especially with UFC 281 next week, which is absolutely nuts. We hope to be in attendance, but I especially at the end of the year, people want to get a last fight in. But this card was just like whatever they had left.
It's
like when you're at a buffet and it's like the last little bit and it's kind of off to the side. It's not even on the hot plate anymore. It's like, it's kind of cold now. Like, they're kind of giving us this last little scoop before they bring out this brand new heaping hot tray of, you know, deliciousness.
Brett. Exactly. Couldn't have said it better myself.
You definitely could have. Brett, thank you so much for hanging out with us and laughing with us and breaking down these fights, man. I hope to cash a couple tickets here.
Yeah, man. I appreciate you guys having me on. It was a good time, and keep up the good work. Like I said, you know, off air, like, I respect your guys' grind. I know content isn't easy, and we're in here an hour and a half just chatting for everyone who's watching. So I hope everyone appreciated, and you know, make sure you follow these guys and like their channel and subscribe. Really helps them out. So yeah, thanks for having me, and hopefully we can do it again sometime.
Thanks so much, Brett. Take care, and we'll be back next week for UFC 281. Can't wait.